Hello and welcome to Growing Up B2B. I'm Ed D'Elia, president of D'Elia Associates, the place where B2B brands go to grow. For over 60 years, and now across two generations, we've been helping B2B companies achieve next-level growth through brand distinction, quality lead generation, and sales enablement. Growing Up B2B was created for family business leaders who are passionate about growth, legacy, and making a lasting impact. Whether it's a multi-generational legacy or multiple family members working together, there's something truly magical about blending business with family. And we want to celebrate that right here on Growing Up B2B. So be sure to stick around to the end of the show and find out how you can be our next guest. Okay, let's get into it. Hello and welcome to another episode of Growing Up B2B. I'm your host, Ed D'Elia, the second generation president of D'Elia Associates, the place where B2B brands go to grow. Today, I'm speaking with Sarah Stern, an EOS implementer and self-described family business fanatic. She has dedicated her career to helping family businesses thrive by bringing structure, clarity, and focus to both their leadership and ownership teams. She leads workshops, guides leaders, and has implemented unique tools like her family business office hour, the three circle model for family businesses, and the experiment, all of which help family businesses navigate the complex intersection of family, ownership, and management. Sarah, welcome to the show. It's great to have you on Growing Up B2B.
It is awesome to be here. I'm really grateful that you have me here today.
Awesome, awesome. So let's start with the big picture. Why are you a self-described family business fanatic? What is it about family businesses that you love?
You know what it is? I was raised in a family where my parents said, you need to do something positive and helpful for this world that we live in. And I thought maybe I better be a teacher, or maybe I better be a doctor or a therapist or something. None of those things were super compelling to me after I dug into them a bit. And business was really interesting to me. And when I learned that family businesses in the US are two-thirds of the businesses, and in other parts of the world, it's 80 or 90%. I realized that helping family businesses be amazing places to work is the way I could make a big positive difference.
And somewhere along the way, you became fanatical about it.
Yeah. That's maybe what I should bring to my therapist. But
that means you're passionate about that.
Yes.
That. Okay. Being somewhat family business centric, how does that shape your approach versus, say, maybe working with your capacity as EOS, a business that's maybe a first generation or a startup or has a kind of a hired gun CEO model?
Yeah. I've had a lot of people over the last 10 years say things to me like, oh, you probably don't mind if the leadership team is three brothers and their mom, or you probably aren't very strict about right people, right seats. And I'm actually the opposite. I'm very strict about sticking to EOS the way it was made to be, because then if you break one rule in EOS, then the question is, why aren't we breaking the other rules? So if we say, oh, sure, the leadership team or the accountability chart can look just like the family tree. If we play that game, then we can mess with everything else. And then it gets personal, it gets unhealthy, it gets destructive. But if a family, and really specifically the leadership team or the owners, or even better, all three, say, we're going to run on EOS, we're going to do it purely, it takes all of the effort, not all, it takes a lot of the opportunities to have your feelings hurt, to feel like things are unfair, to pick fights or have fights, or even the less dramatic things, just, you know, be disappointed or bummed out or unclear about things. It roots that out of the business and lets people be family on family time and colleagues on colleague time.
And that nicely leads into my next question. I think I read somewhere something you said about one of the most common challenges in family business is that separating the family roles and the business roles. Can you share, without naming names, an example of how a situation where EOS helped make that separation much clearer?
Yeah, I had the chance to work with first generation founding dad and his wife and two of their three kids. And at the focus day, we were talking about who should run sales. Dad was ready to be out of the business day to day all the time. And they were talking about one of the sisters running sales. And she was saying, I think I could do a great job. I think the sales team really trusts me. And the dad was saying, oh, I don't know. I don't know if this is right. I don't know if it was right. She was starting to get really upset. And thank goodness I was on that day. I said, is this dad talking to daughter? Or is this the founder talking to his potential successor in the sales team? And he paused for barely any time, a millisecond, and said, oh gosh, this is dad talking. I'm worried that if she runs the sales team, she's not going to have time at home with her kids.
Wow.
Ooh. Oh my gosh, I have goosebumps just thinking about it. I said, okay, that's helpful to know. What does the founder of this company think about her taking over the seat that he's owned for 20 years? He said, I can't think of someone I would trust more. That completely changed the conversation that day.
That's awesome. That's awesome. As I think and reflect on my own journey, because we were an US run company, of all the things that I'd say we struggled with the most, it was probably the darn accountability chart. So what happens when you're working through that exercise and you have to have the hard conversation that even though there might be a Gen 2 that's in the mix of the Gen 1 looking for one of those leadership seats, but again, based on the get it, want it capacity to do it, they just don't fit. How do you work through that?
Yeah. There's a couple of ways. One is I introduced that three circle model of the family business, and that was developed by Harvard about 50 years ago. And it's the three circles are one is family, one is business, and then the third is ownership. And I remind people that we're in the business circle here. We're trying to actually run a great business. And in my dream of dreams for my family business clients, they would spend more time thinking about, as owners of this company, what is the right thing to do? What is the right return on our financial investment? What's the right thing to do for our investment of our time, our energy, our emotion, our love of this business? So I try to back them up to that place and say, if you had bylaws that said you were not allowed to work in this company, what would this job look like? What would be the 3 to 7 bullet points? And then who would be the ideal person to do it? And it's heartbreaking for me when people still just make it just look like the family tree. And because this is what I firmly believe, and I will say this in the session room too. In a family business, if you keep someone in a seat and they don't get it or they don't want it or they don't have the capacity, I see that as being like the fable of the emperor's new clothes. You're letting that person walk around the office naked all day, every day. And everybody knows they're naked and they know they're naked. And it's embarrassing. Mm. And that you would never do that to somebody you love. You would never do that to a family member. And that is what family businesses are doing when they let someone be in a seat that they really shouldn't be in.
And there are constructive ways to navigate those conversations.
Oh, effectively. Yeah.
I'm reflecting on a previous guest on this show who said when it came down to some of the hard conversations among family, and he was speaking more in the context of wealth preservation, transfer of familial wealth, he said something to the effect of speak your mind and do no harm. It was a great sentiment because yes, we want to be truthful. We want to be open. We want to be honest, but we also want to know that words can hurt.
Yeah.
And sometimes it's really hard to walk back something once it comes out of your mouth.
I like to have people really focus on, we're talking about the seat, not the person. You know, it's not that you're a poopy head and you can't do the job. It's that you don't have the experience or the capacity. You're 21 and you've never led a team. How are you supposed to be the head of operations, for example, right? It's not you're a bad guy. It's Let's get you to a position where you're in the right seat and you can excel.
That's a great way to look at it and frame it. That's really great. Going back, so you started the EOS journey about 10 years ago.
Yeah.
Lots of different operating systems and frameworks out there. What kind of drew you to EOS? And from your perspective, why do you think that was resonated so much with you that you made it 10 years later, your mission?
I love that. You and your business started 10 years ago, as well as me. So I love that. I love that. You know what? It was the healthy part, the vision, the traction, the healthy. It's the focus in the system on creating a healthy team. Most family business owners I know are pretty good at the vision and the traction part. They might falter here or there, but they're strong in there. And it's the healthy part that will make it difficult. Sometimes more difficult on the family side than the business side, but it's that focus of being open and honest and truly vulnerable with each other that really got my attention and continues to.
And when it comes to the EOS model, is that really what you would say is really effective for, say, family businesses in particular over other models, that health component?
It is. It's that there is, it's the clarity about the seats and then the focus on not having triangles, right? Not going to, oh, you don't like what your boss said, go to the head, go over to someone else. It's saying we're going to take that out of the business. We're going to have people talking with each other eyeball to eyeball. And then it takes that guessing and that politicking and the wasted time and energy and the many hurt feelings that come from that, getting that out of the business as much as possible.
Yeah. And if I reflected on our own EOS journey as a company, so we just celebrated 60 years last year. So
Wow.
the end in 2014, I guess it was 24, yeah, 2015, I'm sorry, 2015, we had just passed our 50th year.
Yeah.
And all that time leading up to that, I had visioned and imagined how cool it would be to be a 50-year-old company. So what I realized looking back, that was my vision. Was
Yeah.
get to 50.
Turn 50.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And then when we hit 2015, year 51, I realized I didn't really have a plan. I didn't really
Oops.
have a vision. I didn't really know where we were going next. And we, by all indications, we should have had a fine year. And we had this very flat year just because I think we as a business were a little lost. We did not reset the vision. I did not reset the vision. And that's really where we discovered EOS and said, okay, let's use this as the model to set the course for the next battery of years. But
I
yeah,
love that.
it was really a moment of reflection, like, wow, we're treading water.
That's incredible. And here you are 10 years into your EOS journey. Do you remember what your original 10-year target was, and have you hit it? Has it changed?
I think we came close. We had a very big run up during the COVID years, actually, because we're a B2B firm. And so all of our clients and all the people that we serve are all mostly deemed essential, operating
Awesome.
businesses. So a lot of them really flourished. We flourished with them. And then when all that ended around 2024, that was a back to reality here. But
Yeah,
we
yeah.
did. We navigated it, but it was a bit disarming because I'm like, okay, it's felt like back to the future.
Oh my gosh.
It's kind of
Well,
like
I'm sorry, and I love that metaphor. That's so good. I ask that because I've seen a lot of family businesses go through what you went through, this idea of our big vision is to stay alive or to not kill grandpa's baby kind of thing.
yeah.
And then when they start visioning, they either make a vision that's way too small or way too big, and they have to reorient themselves in a couple of years. So I love that you put something out there and you got darn close with the whole pandemic and everything after being in a spot of let's turn 50 and then, uh-oh,
Yes.
now what? Yeah.
Yeah. And I think on a look back too, I probably was leading a lot out of fear because when you're a second gen or third, the fear is don't crash
Yes.
the boat. And I guess it took me a battery of years to say, I think I've got this. We haven't crashed the boat. I think
Yeah.
only down year was 08, which was the Great Recession.
Yeah.
So one down year and however many, I think I'm now in my 30th year or whatever. So I'm like, okay, I don't think I need to govern from fear. I think I can govern from a higher place. And
That's so
that was a
beautiful.
turning point as well. But when you look at EOS and you've been on the journey for 10 years, as I have, where do you see the EOS model going or evolving in the years ahead?
It's a really interesting question. I think in a lot of ways, I see EOS going nowhere. And in other ways, I see EOS going everywhere. And this is what I mean by that. EOS has stayed true to this 20 tools in the toolbox. To the idea that within 2 years of working with an EOS implementer, you've graduated, you have all the potency of those tools and the value of those days without more cash going out the door. I don't see that changing at all. That I see is just absolutely staying true. So that's when I say it's going nowhere. When I say, and because of that, it's timeless. It doesn't chase around fads and whatnot. The reason I see it going everywhere is there are more and more companies that have been running on it for 10 years or even 8. There's more and more of those. And I think there's getting to be a hunger, especially in the visionaries of EOS companies, for kind of what is that next level, the deeper level? What does it look like to lead from a place a higher place than fear, to be moving to courage, to be even leading from a place of peace or joy. And I think there is a hunger for what does it look like to run a business from there. And oh, that's a fun conversation of its own right there.
For sure. So talking about some other tools in your toolkit, and one I thought was brilliant, the Family Business Office Hour. Can you talk about that for a minute and what that's about and what kinds of issues that typically are raised in those sessions?
It's too bad we don't have 2 hours for me to talk about this. I love the Family Business Office Hour. Anybody can come. I've had fellow EOS implementers come. Their clients come. I've had family businesses come that don't run on EOS. I've had psychologists come. I've had financial planners come. So it's truly a place for anybody involved in the family business world to come. And we have a very important rule. We follow the Las Vegas rules. What happens here stays here. So this is not a place to come and, oh, they're so messed up. It's not that. And it's also not a place to be sold to or to sell anything. And with that, I start with a very short family business tool or way to think about something. And then I open up the conversation to whatever questions people have. Sometimes there's maybe two or three or four people there, and it will become a conversation of just people helping each other. Other times with more people, it's people throwing out a specific question or maybe just a thing they've been thinking about with family business. I'll respond. Other people might ask follow-up questions, and then off we go. We spend 1 hour. It's every other week on a Monday afternoon, or at least Monday afternoon in the central time zone. I love it. There are very common questions, as you can imagine. Oh my gosh, I've got someone in a seat, either in my client or in my own family business, and we know they're not in the right spot. How do we handle it? Other big questions are often, how do we start to bring the next generation in to have a conversation about ownership? Or it'll either be how do we bring the next generation in? Or the next generation is saying, the current owning generation doesn't want to talk about it. How do we bring them into the conversation? Those are probably the top three questions.
That's all healthy discussions. And sometimes I'm sure you've seen this where the first generation, maybe it's time for them to depart.
Yeah.
But they have an awfully hard time fully departing. And that can be, I don't know if you've ever run into those scenarios.
No, I've never seen someone who's not ready to depart. Just kidding. Yeah, that is so common. It is, you mentioned the word fear. It's so common for whatever generation owns it. It might even be the third generation thinking about the fourth generation to be full of fear about, have I prepared them enough? What is my life if I don't come here every day? Thinking, I don't know if this is your experience, but I know a lot of next generation family business owners who literally were at the office when they were a week old. They have spent their entire life in the business and they don't have a sense of who am I if I'm not in here every single day. That's terrifying for people. It's a big transition.
Absolutely. And I can understand being a father now myself. And I recall a conversation, my father was our accountant and myself. And I think I had to remind them, by the way, I'm in the room, guys. Because they're like, my dad was saying, I'm not sure if he's ready. What if he fails? And my accountant said, let him.
Yo, that's beautiful.
He's going to be okay.
Yeah.
If he falters, let him falter because he's going to learn. And I'm right here, guys, by the way. I'm in the room.
Yeah. Hi. Yeah.
And it took some doing. But obviously some of our strongest lessons are learned by falling down and picking ourselves back up. And
yeah.
And why did I fall? And what happened there? And how do I not do that again?
Yes. Which I think it's just part of the human experience. It's like you cannot learn a lot of those things from reading a book or watching someone else. You have to scrape your knees.
Absolutely. Let's touch on another model that you referenced and that you utilize, it sounds like, in your practice, the three circle model.
Yes.
The business system as a cornerstone framework. How do you apply that model with clients? And what do you think makes it so powerful, Sarah?
The number one way I apply it is drawing it on the whiteboard. It's three circle Venn diagram, family, business, ownership. I can tell you there are so many people who give me credit for making that tool. And I think it's just because I'm the first one who put it in front of them. Mm. And to a person, people see that, advisors to family businesses and family business owners, they see that model and their eyebrows go up and the light bulb goes on. Most family businesses accidentally put those three circles all on top of each other. And when they see them connected, but also distinct, it changes so much. I don't know, this is such a silly term, but if I had a nickel for every time I've seen somebody's eyebrows go up on that, my kids' college would be paid for. So it's so simple. It's so powerful. I'm so grateful for that model to Harvard for doing that. Number one is just putting it on the board and reminding people in this room today, we are colleagues. We are colleagues. We're not owners. We are not family members. We're colleagues, which is not to say that I ignore the fact that they also have to go to the family reunion next week or the kids' birthday party over the weekend, that they have holiday plans, that, you know, between two brothers, one of them might have crashed the other one's bike when they were seven, or I know all of that's at play. And to have a really healthy family, I think it's important to run a healthy business with appropriate boundaries, where you're not duking it out about something that happened 37 years ago when you're in a level 10.
Yeah. So another tool that I found very interesting, you called it the experiment.
Yes.
Can you talk about that for a little bit? What inspired you to create it and how people responded to it, how it works?
Yeah. This, what I have seen in family business is you can adopt EOS or other models. You can learn about the three circle model. And if you don't do your own internal work, all of that other stuff is, it's not as potent. It's not as helpful. So the experiment is, it's really weird. It's really funny. It's an opportunity, it's an invitation to simply feel your feelings instead of stuffing them or escaping from them or even talking about them. And I host a call, a free call on Mondays. It's in the morning. I do the family business office hour in the afternoon. I love my Mondays. And I simply make kind of playful invitations to people to feel their feelings. We don't talk about our feelings. It's not all screaming and yelling and crying there. Sometimes people laugh. Sometimes people do cry. Often people are really just having quiet time on their own. And it is not only family business owners who come. There are EOS implementers who come. There are family business owners who come. There are some of my friends and some of my family, and the group of people who are coming is growing more and more. And it was built out of a desire to give people something very simple that they could run on their own, learn very quickly. You can run an experiment in the middle of a meeting. You start to get frustrated, angry. Feel that. Feel it all the way. It's wildly powerful in my own life. And that's what really got it started, is I started doing this and then said, I can't keep this a secret. I need to share this with other folks.
That's really powerful. Well, I'm getting a little choked up just thinking about it.
Run the experiment. And oh, here's the best thing about the experiment. It is not just for the things like, I can't stand my brother. It's for happiness. It's for joy.
Yeah.
It's for frustration. And it's not just for big things like when your puppy died when you were 12 or your goldfish died. Those are like the big giant things in life. It's for the petty stuff, like the person who's not zipper merging right, or the person checking you out in the grocery store who's taking their time. It's for the big stuff, the little stuff, the petty stuff, the happy stuff, the sad stuff. It's for all of the human things that we bump into.
That's really
all
cool.
All day long. Yeah.
I love it. One of the things that EOS seems to do a good job of ferreting out, and it sounds like you do a fair amount of ferreting out, is what I'll call blind spots.
Yes.
Gaps and blind spots. So when it comes to leadership in the family business, what would you say is one of the big blind spots that shows up a lot in the clients you work with?
I would say the number one is the assumption that the best way to run a family business is the way the royal family runs the royal family, with the heir apparent being figured out at birth. It's so easy to do. It's so common. And it creates so many problems. I cannot find research that supports what I'm about to say, but I know it's true anyway. I believe the percentage of people who have addiction problems in family business is significantly higher than the rest of the population. And I think that is the root issue, is people being pushed into positions that they don't get, or they don't want, or they don't have the capacity. And now they're walking around the office naked, and they know it, and everybody else knows it. And it's horrifying. And it leads them to cope using whatever addiction they can find that works the best for them. And it's a sad, it's a bummer. It's so sad.
Yeah. Very true. Another thing that you had touched on at one point in some of your writings was finding a shared vision. So how do you help guide families to get aligned on a vision, a shared vision, when you might say there's like competing priorities or, and this is probably common or something, generational differences, where I'm the second generation and I overlap with my dad. Maybe he had a vision and mine was different, so they weren't really aligned. So how do you pave the way to say, okay, let's get alignment on a vision? How do you do that?
My favorite way to do that, and this is outside of EOS, I also do some work with family businesses in their ownership circle. There's a question that I like to ask ownership groups, which is, this is my definition or how I like to help them define their legacy. It's the answer to two questions. Why do we own this business? And the answer I always push beyond because I don't want to crash the boat. Is that how you put it? Yeah.
Yep.
Because I'm just trying not to crash the boat. If that is the reason you own it, there's so much pressure. It takes away strategic thinking. It takes away creative thinking, and it's terrifying. So why do you actually own it? And then the second piece of the legacy is, what are you trying to create that will exist in 100 years? So everybody in this room is going to be dead, but what are you trying to create? And I find that opens up people to get totally aligned. Oh, here's why we own this thing. Oh my gosh, one family business I worked with, the owner had just bought out, I don't know, I swear he had 150 siblings. I don't know. He had bought them out one by one. He finally owned this thing. And he was bringing in his kids. And this question of why do we own it? In some ways, it had become that we own it because those other idiots are incompetent. No, why? Why? And then what are we trying to create? And they realized that they were actually facing a potential need to lay people off in the business. Or an opportunity, I'll say, to lay people off. And they realized what they loved. They owned this business because they wanted to create an opportunity for family members to be entrepreneurial. And they were in a pretty small town. They also loved having good jobs in their community. And out of that one, they owned several businesses. Out of that one decision, they ended up selling off two businesses. They didn't lay people off and outsource them to other places. And then they started two other businesses.
Okay, cool.
That question helped them free up from just, we own it because now we own it. We won to, okay, what are we doing here? What is this about?
Cool. The so my so we hit our 50th year in 2014. My dad said they had passed in 2012,
Oh,
and
wow.
around the 50th, we put together some look backs and all that stuff, honoring the year. And in the course of that, I talked to my sister, who'd I've been involved in the business for a good 10 or 15 years. And I touched on the subject of vision. Did dad ever have a, and she said he was on record as saying to our uncle, who asked the question, what do you see for the associates? And he said simply, I want to build something that lives beyond me. And that was really his vision, is to something that was enduring beyond his existence that's still enduring today. And dad, sometimes in a silent prayer to dad, I say, Dad, mission accomplished. He did it.
That gives me goosebumps. I love that. That's beautiful.
Conversely, when I was having a kind of a dark day, and it was early on when I was in the process of the buyout and the business was really frustrating me, and I have an older brother who's he's exited his business and retired quite wealthy. I was complaining to him one day and he said, why did you buy dad's business? He asked me. And I was all huffed up and I said, to make money. And he goes, you were stupid. And I said, why? He said, if you wanted to make money, you sure as heck shouldn't have gotten into the marketing services business. So what he reminded me in that moment is maybe you did it because you love it, you're good at it, and you have a passion for doing it and a passion for taking the business forward. And he kind of recentered me in that
Oh my gosh. Siblings can be so wonderful and so horrible all in the same moment.
So let's touch on transitions for a minute. I'm sure you've observed a lot of transitions. What advice might you give to that second or third, that next generation who's going to transitioning or stepping into leadership for the first time?
What I often see people in the next generation do and say is, I can't take the reins until they give them to me. And my advice would be, do not wait to be handed the reins. The day's not going to come. If the words are, it's yours, take the reins.
Yeah.
In a lot of family businesses, the words are take the reins and the actions don't follow that up. If the words, if the documents, if the legal agreements, if the name on the paper says your name, or even if the words are, it's your turn, take it, go. You must take it and go. Yes.
That is wonderful advice, in that, because if that next generation doesn't, and you see this, and I've seen this, and you've probably seen this. Okay, so that first generation then hangs around.
Yes.
Hangs around past their prime, and then sadly maybe passes at some point.
Yeah.
And then you've got that second generation basically discovering, do I have what it takes to be the leader for the first time at maybe age 55 or 57 or 80?
Yes.
Or something ridiculous. And lo and behold, oh my gosh, there's gaps in my game. I can't do this the way I thought I could because I was crutching on dad or mom all these years.
Yes.
That's a scary place to be at that age and just figuring out for the first time, do I have what it takes?
Yeah. Scary, risky.
I wanted to know very soon. I want to buy this. I want to learn what I need to know. And then dad, I think I love you. I think it's time.
That's awesome. And I bet that was comforting to him, your confidence and he might not have loved it every moment. And you obviously had that conversation with your accountant, but that's confidence.
But he definitely, there was about a 3-month period where he was kind of like a bit ruffled. And then an amazing thing happened. And I like to think of it as he discovered retirement and all the things in his life that he shelved, all the things that he wanted to do, all the aspirations that he put on the sidelines in the name of running the business, he got to do those things. And his last 12 years, he was just an invaluable mentor to me. Our relationship grew exponentially. And I'd often turn to him advice and he'd say, I don't really understand the technology of your business today. But the advice I would turn to him on was all people stuff, Sarah. I was like, how do I deal with this client? They're doing this. How do I deal with this employee who's doing that? And he had answers for that. And he had knowledge for that and wisdom. Mm. But yeah, for a couple of months there, he's just, I'm not happy with you.
Yeah, I'm sure he wasn't. Yeah.
But he got over it. And then once he got over it, he was off and running.
I love that. And what a gift you gave both of each other. He gave you the gift of running the business and you gave him the gift of following his other passions and his dreams.
All of his passions and dreams that he wanted to do, but never got around to doing, he suddenly could do. So that leads to really the flip side of that. So what advice would you give to say that senior generation as they're preparing to step back and hand over said reins? What would you tell them?
There's two things I would tell them. One is plan way earlier than you think you should. I actually take my ownership teams through an exercise where I say, write down your name. If you're married or have a partner, write down their name, your kids, all the other owners and your leadership team. What is their age today? And then add 10 years and 10 years. And it's spooky how a 3-year-old becomes a 33-year-old very quickly. In a business, 10 years goes by fast.
Yes, it does.
So plan early. It's like voting in Chicago. Do it early, do it often. Sorry, that's a joke my parents make all the time. I think in the 70s, there was a lot of bad voting there. I don't even know. Anyway, whatever. Please excuse. I'm trying to have grown-up language and references, and it fell apart now. So anyway, plan early, plan often. And then the second thing is the other side of the reins. You must hand them over. Do not wait for them to take them. I've seen so many families, it's watching a middle school track meet relay race. Have you ever done that? It's so horrible. The batons always fall, or the kids are always out of the lane because they haven't figured out the handoff. And it's one is trying to hand it and the other one's not sure. Don't do that. If you're handing it, don't wait till the day you think they're going to take it. Don't wait for them to take it. If your words say, I'm giving you the rein, put the rein in their hand and then let him goof up.
Yeah.
Let him make the mistake. Let them do it.
I had an opportunity, unfortunate but fortunate, when I was in my early 20s, my dad needed hip surgery. Mm-hmm. And back then, it wasn't like, okay, you had hip surgery, an hour later, let's go walk around. No, it was, he was out of the box for a solid month.
Wow.
And maybe I was 24, 25, something like that. The ship was mine to run fully. And I loved it. And I loved it so much that when he came back, I'm like, oh gosh. So I'm like, but it was an invaluable experience for me because it's like, one, it was firsthand proof I can do this. And two, I like doing this. And three, okay, we need to figure out what dad needs to do next because he came back.
I want it. That's fun. I love that.
So it was a great moment for me to really test drive the ship. And I'm like, wow, we didn't sink. We had a good month. We were profitable. Everybody got stuff done. And I got to make decisions and I was okay to make decisions because he was out of the box. He was gone. He was recovering. So anyway, I'm going to touch on this just because it's prevalent right now in conversation in every industry, artificial intelligence showing up everywhere. So where do you see AI showing up with the work that you're doing for family businesses or even how family businesses are operating in general? Do you see that showing up? Do you see trepidation about it? Do you see adoption happening? What are you seeing when you see AI entering the picture in some of the clients you serve?
Do I see trepidation? Yes. Do I see adoption? Yes.
All the above.
All of the above. I almost just said yes to your question. I think there's a really cool opportunity for young people to step in and have a voice, assuming they're into it. Maybe they're not. I think there's a really cool opportunity for family businesses to dig in and use AI to get more efficient in so many ways. And I have a little worriness, if that's a word. So many family businesses are so loyal to their teams, which is something I love about family businesses. A lot of people who work in family businesses feel very safe in their jobs because they should, because family businesses will often not lay people off when they should, or sadly not fire people when they should, meaning because they don't GWC the job. But I have a little worry that this could be a thing that pushes family businesses behind, that causes them to get into a situation where they are not profitable, where they have to sell or close. And I hope that I'm wrong. I really hope I'm wrong about that. Instead, I hope they're able to embrace it in a way that they are still able to have all of the integrity that so many family businesses have when it comes to how they take care of their people, how they're thoughtful, how they're planful, while also finding ways to make their employees' jobs easier. And make their business more profitable. And that's going to take a lot of getting beyond the fear zone. Yeah.
And in our experience here, we've been very adoptive, I'd say early adopters of AI, but apply it in a very pragmatic way, in a very balanced way, because there's some things that we found certain platforms do exceptionally well.
Yeah.
And then some things that they just aren't there yet. And even to the extent of, I was doing a ChatGPT prompt and it referenced a very anecdotal story. I'm like, wow, that's really cool. Can you cite the source? No, it's just theoretical. Oh, okay. You made it up. Yeah. Okay. Glad I didn't go to the bank with that one. So we talk a lot about trust and verify.
What I love about that example is, and for some people, this is absolutely terrifying, but I love that AI prompts, are causing people to be getting better at asking questions. Mm-hmm. And in my opinion, what makes a great relationship is asking great questions, be human to human. And wouldn't it be cool if having AI means we start to have stronger relationships with each other because we get better at asking questions?
And it's particularly effective at if you get a snarly email from someone and you want to write a smarmy email back and you stop and say, all right, ChatGPT, how do I make this less abrasive? It's usually gives you, okay, here's
wildly effective for
the emotion. Yeah. And okay, yeah, that's a better way forward than what I really wanted to say.
I think who knows how this is going to go. 18 months from now, we'll look back and listen to ourselves and say, what were we talking about? But yeah. I think that there could be this opportunity for we humans to be more human with each other and less machine. Mm-hmm. You know, business kind of has tried to make humans be machines, and we just simply are not. And I think we have an opportunity to get really human with each other. And I'm excited about that.
As I am as well. I am as well. I think there's more opportunity than not. And it's exciting. It's exciting in our industry. It's exciting. And I've talked to a number of people on the show, and to hear about how some of them are applying AI in very impactful ways is really exciting.
Yeah.
So finally, Sarah, if somebody wanted to learn more about you, EOS, or some of the tools that you're implementing, like Family Business Office Hours and the others, what's the best way for them to find you and connect?
Yeah, Google or AI or ChatGPT yourself to EOS Worldwide. That's where all the good information is about EOS. If you want to do a deeper dive on the Family Business Office Hour, I'd love to have people join me there, the experiment. I've written two very short books for family business owners. They're more like adult coloring books. They're mostly white. There's place to journal and think. I have a website. It's Sarah B. Stern, S-A-R-A. I don't have that silent H. The letter B, Stern, S-T-E-R-N. I like to laugh and say my name is a sentence. So sarahbstern.com is probably the best way to find those specific things. Yeah.
Awesome. Sarah, thank you so much for joining me on Growing Up B2B. Your passion for helping family businesses thrive, it really comes through. And it's inspiring to hear you're giving leaders both practical tools and a fresh perspective to navigate both family and business life. Again, we've been speaking with Sarah Stern, EOS implementer and family business fanatic. And I'm your host, Ed D'Elia, and this is Growing Up B2B. Thanks so much for listening, and we'll see you next time. Sarah, thank you so much for joining us today.
Thanks for having me. It was really fun.
Awesome. Take care. Hey, thanks so much for tuning into Growing Up B2B. To explore more episodes and insights, visit podcast.delianet.com. And if you've enjoyed this episode, please give us a rating or review on your podcast platform of choice. Having worked with hundreds of family-led businesses across my career, and being a second-generation leader myself, I'm on a mission to help every family business I meet achieve next-level growth for their organization. So feel free also to connect with me on LinkedIn and let's support each other. You can also find out more about my company at DeliaNet.com. Again, I'm your host, Ed D'Elia, and thanks so much for joining us today. Take care.